Thank you for choosing the Redneck Dentist Podcast. So let's get to today's freedom-inspiring episode.
Hey, this is Doc Mike. You wouldn't believe it. You would believe it, because you just heard it. Hang on, once. Right as I'm getting ready to go live, I knocked the mic. I couldn't knock it over, but I knocked it loose, and it's just swinging around, banging into things. That was awesome, wasn't it? Oh, well. Okay, so now I got to figure out where I'm going to start. Oh, number one, let's get started with the show. This is Doc Mike on Real Liberty Media. Thanks for joining me live. If you're here live, if you listen on a podcast, I appreciate that too. If you want to get in the conversation, the chat room is open. Lots of people here in the chat room. Things are changing on Real Liberty Media. So, you know, some people are going to be coming back. And there's going to be chatters. Feel free to come in and join the conversation. Shoot me a message if you want or not. Sometimes I try and keep an eye on the chat, but sometimes I'm just rattling on so much, I'm not paying attention to the chat. But I'll check it once in a while. So, so it looks like things are going to change here in Real Liberty Media. We're finally going to start picking up the pace, getting things going, more shows, hopefully. Everything is coming. It'll be great. It's been a little bit of a change, you know, since we lost Grimner. And that's a big deal. It was a really big deal, and it's taken some time to get back going. But I think things are going to be awesome. So let's have a good time together. And I also wanted to mention the few places that I do have my podcast, and I wanted to thank those places for allowing me, of course, to put my podcast up. It's not like they have a lot of restrictions, but, you know, there are places like YouTube and Instagram and, I don't know, places that restrict free speech, and I just wouldn't survive on that. I've thought about it several times. I kind of sucked in some spit into my windpipe, had to cough. I've thought about it several times, like, you know, getting on YouTube, because, of course, YouTube has the biggest audience, but I just can't bring myself to do it, because I don't like supporting places that censor speech. And everybody, I mean, there's always rules. Like, there's some things that you just can't get on, you know, well, the airways or the internet and say, for good reason, I suppose. But I mean, there's been some really extreme things lately. I'm going to bring something up today that is a correction to fake news. People got banned over, you know, in the last 2 years, people were banned over this news. And, you know, it turns out, yeah, it was true. And we're going to, you know, I've said before, we're going to see more and more of that as time goes on, as more research is done, as more studies are published, you know, so the rest of the world understands that this was all BS. You know, it's going to take a while. Unfortunately, you know, everybody, you know, the mainstream media jumps on the bandwagon and just spreads the lies and continues to propagate, you know, the falsehoods. And the people who know and are trying to spread the truth had to go somewhere else. So anyway, I like to thank, Rumble, BitChute, and Odyssey, and specifically Buzzsprout, where my podcast is, redistributed, let's say. I guess it's a hosting site, and then it gets redistributed from there to places like Spotify and iHeart, and I don't know where all it goes. I've applied for maybe 10 different 10 different podcasting servers, but, you know, like, iTunes isn't going to put my show on there because, you know, I speak the truth, and they don't like the truth either. So anyway, I appreciate those people. Also, Hurricane Coffee here in Sheridan, Oregon, fantastic people, and they make great coffee. They're one of my favorites. And and this week, Northwest Armory, man, really happy with them. Ha ha ha. Glock's got a new home. Anyway, what else we got going? Oh, Barman is back up. If you've been in the chat room lately and you notice there's no Barman, well, Barman is back. Welcome back, Barman. Barman's just basically a bot or a script that does a bunch of stuff for us, like puts the show title up there. If somebody wants to check and see what show is on, they can do it through Barman. I think there's a weather bot too, but I don't think it is currently up. No, it doesn't look like it. This week here on the homestead, well, this weekend, holiday weekend, 4th of July, Independence, well, Independence Day, as long as we can hold on to it, doesn't look like it's going to last much longer. I don't know if it is or not, honestly, but, oh my God, the world is so crazy. I'm not kidding. Like, I think to myself regularly, this can't possibly be true. Like, things can't, this has to be made up or planned or programmed or designed by somebody, because the stuff that's going on in the world today, it doesn't make sense to me. And I've been around a while. I've seen some pretty wild and crazy crap, but there's some stuff that I hope every week I bring something that you just got to think to yourself, that can't possibly be real. And this week, I think I have at least two examples of stuff that you just think it can't possibly be real. Hey, and while I'm thinking about that, I just, right before showtime, maybe an hour ago or something, I had this thought. Like, I kind of like to listen to some paranormal stuff or cryptozoology. You know, that's critters that are kind of, what do you say? They're kind of mythological, or like Bigfoot, or, you know, Swamp Man, or Mothman, or Bat Boy, or, you know, any of that stuff. I love kind of hearing about it. And what I really hate is when somebody has video, and that video is just, like, so crappy in one way or another. Like, for example, two videos this week. One was of a deer being stalked by two Bigfoot, right? Well, when you look at the video, it's like, okay, like, I think those are trees, honestly, or bushes. I don't think those are Bigfoot. And the other one was a guy apparently photographed a UFO that was like an eye looking through the clouds. But it was, I swear to God, it was like the sun or the moon shining through some cloud. I mean, it wasn't convincing at all. Or another example, this was years ago, someone put up a video that had these UFOs that were spotted and filmed. There was like seven of them. And so the video started, and I was watching it, and I'm watching these seven birds flying through the sky, and I'm like, okay, like, where's this UFO going to show up? And then the video restarts. I'm like, are you kidding me? I mean, anybody with any, like, anybody who's ever looked in the sky before and seen birds flying would know that this was seven birds. And yeah, the footage was kind of shaky, which is kind of funny, because of course then you couldn't really focus on the birds, right? That you couldn't really maybe process in your mind that it was birds, but it was birds. Like, I mean, my brain instantly converted them to birds, and I was waiting to see the UFOs, and then I realized, oh, seven UFOs, it's these seven birds. Come on, people. Let's at least make it, you know, kind of believable. And I'm not kidding. I'm not a naysayer, really. But if it's something as obvious as the sun peeking through a little tiny, tiny little space in the clouds, it's the sun peeking through clouds. Okay? So let's keep it going, man, because I love looking at that stuff. And I love... Hey, thanks, Moose Girl. And yeah, we'll be checking them out. Who wouldn't? Billy Streams on Mixlr. Oh, Yeah. Okay, so what I was getting ready to say is, this weekend is going to be a nice, quiet weekend here on the homestead. The kids and the grandkids went to the coast for a couple reasons. One, 4th of July weekend, and it's going to be okay. The weather's going to be okay. But they've had this party planned at the coast for a couple months anyway for, well, the two kids' birthday, Crystal and Scotty. Scott's birthday is today. Happy birthday, Scott. And Crystal's birthday is the first of next month, August. But so they're getting together with some friends out at the coast. They're going to enjoy 4th of July, and the grandkids are with them. So Rochelle and I are home alone. And yeah, we're eating ice cream and watching crappy stuff on TV. Well, that's what we have planned anyway. Oh my goodness. Hey, I wanted to give you a little update on Ruby, the new golden retriever pup. Oh my God. She is such a doll, man. Such a lover, snuggler, smart as a whip. And she's getting along with everybody now. And Bear is actually even kind of backing off a little bit. And he's spent some time with her outside. And yeah, they're all getting along good for now. So that's good. That's really good. What else? Oh, yeah. Glock has a new home. I just had to, you know, I've never owned a Glock. And there was a sale at Northwest Armory. That's why I mentioned them earlier. And I just wanted, like, I have a Sig Sauer, you know, I have some other guns. Well, I used to have before I lost them in a boating accident. But I've never had a Glock. And I know the good and bad stuff about Glocks. But this one I just had to have. It's a different, kind of slightly different 9mm semi-auto, of course. And it was a good deal, so I had to have it. And also, I was kind of checking to see if I was on the no-fly list or the terrorism watch list here in the United States. I actually told that to the guy at the gun shop. He knew I was kidding. He laughed. He thought it was funny. Okay. I did kind of want to mention. Today, for a few weeks, I've been looking at old email notes and stuff that I had, and I was like, man, I got to clean up some of this stuff, but I don't want to just toss it because it was important enough for me to mark as important for show notes at some point. And so I went all the way to the bottom of my email list and I started bringing in some of those stories. And so there's going to be some quick hit stuff kind of later in the show, probably toward the ending. Yeah. Hey, I did want to point out a couple fun things. Well, one fun thing for sure right off the bat. You may not know this, but there is actually a comet in the sky, at least here in the United States, on the West Coast. I don't know how far east you can go before you can't see it anymore. But I'll tell you what, I'm going to post a link in the chat room. So see, benefit of being in the chat room. And I'm going to tell you a couple things about this particular article. Well, one, it's kind of funny, but it's kind of a travel advertisement for coming to Oregon. But it has this information about this comet in it, and you can actually view this comet. And it's kind of easier to view on the coast. But if you kind of scroll down in this article, oh, let me kind of give you some specifics first. I said there is a comet approaching Earth, and it is not small. Comet could be among the largest ever visible now on Oregon and Washington coast. In fact, it can already be seen on the Washington and Oregon coast. Comet C-Slant 2017 K2 Pan-STARRS requires at least binoculars, but can be seen in the southern skies. Now, if you look at the link I posted, there's a program on there called Stellarium, and Stellarium is part of the Linux installation. I'm not 100% sure if you can install Stellarium on a Windows-based system. But if you can, it's I think it's free and open source, so you can just put it on there. And then you could kind of see where this comet is in the sky, where you are, and go out and have a look. I love using Stellarium, by the way. If I want to go out and look at the night sky and I want to look at something in particular, oh boy. Hale-bopp, CIA conspiracy stuff out there now too. Oh, interesting. But anyway, that Stellarium program. So if you can identify those things, on the Stellarium program, you know, go out and have a look and see if you can find this comet. We, of course, will not be able to see it tonight because it's been cloudy. And, oh, good, it does work on Windows, too. That's awesome. Great little program. Very nice little program. I really enjoy that one. But anyway, no, it's just crazy. So, you know, we had like a mid-90s day, and then like an 80s day, and then all of a sudden clouds moved in and started getting pretty cool. Like at one point today, I was actually thinking I was getting cold, but not cold, cold, just like, hey, it's freaking cold. Like 50-something, I don't know. It was not warm, and it was cloudy and gray. It hasn't really rained, although we may get some rain tomorrow or on Monday, but yeah. Cloudy and cool, so I'm not going to see this comet. I don't know. There might be a break in the clouds. I might go out and have a look. Maybe in the morning. It might be clear for a few minutes or something. I don't know. But, man, this comet is huge. So, let's see what it says. That's no small feat. Right now, the comma or coma or clouds of dust and gas comprising its tail is at least 81,000 miles in diameter. That's as big as Jupiter and roughly 10 times the size of Earth. Scientists think the tail may be 500,000 miles long, 500,000 mile long tail. Said it's an extraordinary and unusual chunk of rock and ice. Its behavior is puzzling. It's too cold where it is right now to be erupting with gas and ice and thus acquiring a fuzzball around it. Jewett said the theory is there's some kind of sublimation going on there, which is where a substance transfers directly from solid state into a gaseous state without passing through the liquid state. And then there's the pure size of the thing. How much bigger will it get? The largest comet ever recorded was C-2014 UN-271 Bernadelli-Bernstein, which has a nucleus bigger than the state of Rhode Island. Scientists theorize that comet K2 Center could be anywhere from 11 to 100 miles. Holy cow, man. That's ginormous. So anyway, there's your fun thing to do this week. Oh, yeah, let me see. When did they say July? Oh, yeah, July 14th. It's going to pass closest to the Earth, July 14th, which means not very close at all. It's a long ways away. It's not going to be one of these things where, you know, the news people are going to be telling you that there's a rock headed for the Earth and, you know, we need to take evasive action. Steer this Earth off course. Let's not get hit by a gigantic comet. Anyway, I did want to kind of get that out because it's the fun thing of the show today, I think. I don't really know if there's any other fun stuff. I have to think for a minute if there is. Or I can just cruise through my notes. Well, some of this stuff is fun, but it's horrible. Yeah, I could tell you this. Okay, so I'm going to tell you this story because this involves another kind of, this is more of a wildlife kind of thing. Like, I have this love-hate relationship with vultures, okay, and turkey vultures in particular, because that's the only kind of vulture that we have here in the state of Oregon. And, of course, we have them a lot here. Like, we watch them all the time, every single day. Except, I think, in wintertime, you really don't see very many of them. And then when I was kind of reading about vultures today, it's because, well, they don't like to hang around in the wintertime. They go somewhere else. But here's why all of a sudden vultures became part of today's notes. So I wasn't really aware of this. So much of what I'm going to tell you is from what I heard from Rochelle. But, okay, I did see this fawn, but it didn't really register with me at all. But anyway, there was a baby fawn about 1 mile from here. And if you've watched any of my Take Fives that are over on BitChute and Rumble and Odyssey, they're at least on BitChute and Rumble. If you've watched any of those, you've noticed I've been riding my motorcycle. I have a GoPro on my helmet, so you can kind of see exactly where I'm going. Anyway, this fawn was along one of those trips, or along that trip to work and back. And I'd seen her one day, but she was alone. And I didn't think much of it, because you see fawns alone. I mean, fawns sometimes are left alone. Sometimes they're just trailing their mom by a while, or mom's moved up to another field, and fawn is finally kind of poking along, going her way. But apparently, this fawn's mom was hit and killed like 4 days ago. And, how do you know that fawn's mom is dead? Like, if I'm going to work and I see a fawn, it's just a fawn. I mean, okay, we have fawns this time of year. So, not unusual to see a fawn by itself without its mom. I mean, a lot of times you see them with their moms, right? But it's not unusual to see a fawn by itself. Hang on, drink time. Everybody drink. Okay. Well, it turns out, like, Rochelle had seen this fawn alone for a couple days, and then there was a jogger kind of coming up the hill, and I guess her and the jogger, she was in the car, and the jogger was jogging, of course, alongside the road, and the fawn was nearby, and Rochelle stopped, and they were talking about it for a minute, and he said, oh, yeah. He said, I feel so bad for that fawn because its mom got hit and killed. And she was like, oh? How do you know that? And he said, oh, I saw the mom, you know, on the side of the road over here. And Rochelle said, that's weird. I haven't seen that carcass, you know, on the hill. And he goes, oh, no, somebody came and picked it up right away. Well, Oregon recently kind of made this law that you could harvest roadkill. And so a lot of people, of course, now especially, a lot of people are looking to harvest roadkill, you know, versus poaching, I guess. But so somebody probably harvested that doe. Well, so the fawn's got no mom. Well, Rochelle didn't know that until, I think, yesterday. Was it yesterday? Yeah, yesterday. And she actually texted me at work, and she said, hey, do you want to bottle feed a fawn? Okay, so my first reaction is, okay, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, you know, they have a prohibition on interfering with wildlife. And so if you find a fawn by itself, you're supposed to leave it alone. So we mostly, you know, abide by the law as much as we can, possibly. And if, you know, well, you know, like I would have interfered and gone and got that fawn if, you know, if we verified that the mom was dead, the fawn was alone, we could have gone and captured that fawn. In fact, we had a neighbor looking out for it since we heard this story yesterday. You know, all of us up here on the hill where I live, you know, it's not like we're really tight as far as socializing or anything, but everybody kind of looks out for everybody else in one way or another. And so we all know each other, and we all know where each family lives and where their property extends to, and who could have eyes on this whole situation. Well, so yesterday, kind of Rochelle asked one of the neighbors if, you know, keep an eye out for this fawn. We're going to try and get it and, you know, feed it and then turn it over to Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. Well, today, when I went down the hill, I'm always scoping out this area, you know, it's kind of a wide open, a little bit of a clear cut area, And that's apparently where this fawn would be going between a real wooded area on one side of the road and this kind of open area for grazing on the other side of the road. But she's too small. You know, I think she obviously wasn't weaned yet and probably too young to eat enough to sustain her life because she's a mammal. She needed her mom. Well, as I got down to that area, I see this one bird sitting on this deadhead, this old dead tree, you know, that just has the limb sticking out. No leaves, no new branches, this old dead tree. And I'm kind of looking at it thinking, oh, I wonder what kind of bird that is. Because, you know, it could have been an eagle, it could have been a hawk, it could have been, you know, it could have been a raven for that matter. Got to turn my phone off. I hate it when it interrupts me when we're online here. Okay, that should do it. Anyway, so as I'm kind of looking at this bird, and I'm like, oh, dang it, it's a vulture. And it was right in the area where that fawn had been wandering around. So I went down the one road really slowly. I turned on the next road, which has a different view of that vulture, and I see that vulture there, and I'm just thinking, oh, was not good, because the vulture was up in an area where, you know, cars don't go. It's not like something got hit by a car and went way the hell up the hill. You know, and I'm pretty sure it was this fawn had passed. But anyway, so I went on down to the coffee shop, the local coffee shop. I support them as much as I can because they're good people and they're locals. I like to keep them employed and doing well. And got our coffees for the morning, well, drinks. I have a chai, and Rochelle has a ice white mocha. And I come back, and I look at that vulture again. I'm like, oh, God. And this is what I'm saying about my love-hate relationship with vultures, man. Because vultures actually do us all a service, right? Like, things die, and vultures come in and clean up the mess. I mean, yeah, there's some other critters. Coyotes will do it, too. But vultures are like Johnny on the spot, man. When something dies, they're just like right there, like, okay, you know, it's time to clean up this mess. And they're like the garbage men of the environment. You know, they come in, clean up the mess, you know, kind of keeps the cycle of life going and keeps, you know, diseases from being spread too, because, you know, they say like rabies and other diseases, you know, if other predators or scavengers, animals versus birds, were to come and, you know, they would get exposed to some of these diseases and the disease would spread. So, you know, vultures do a good job. It's just that, man, then it kind of like really hurts your heart that you didn't get to this fawn in time, you know, to help out. So anyway, I didn't see the fawn. I didn't see the vulture eating the fawn or anything like that. I just made this assumption, right? So when I got home, I told Rochelle the whole scenario. Oh, and there was another doe there that had a fawn with her that was healthy and eating, and they were fine. And I'm like, oh, man, I don't know. This doesn't look good. So then Rochelle and I were going to head to town for other stuff, just supplies for the holiday weekend here, so we didn't have to go out Sunday or Monday. Well, so as we head down the hill, you know, we're both looking out for this, and the vulture isn't on the tree anymore. And I was like, I got to find this vulture, because I know that vulture... But here's the thing. Vultures don't waste a lot of energy. They're like really efficient. I don't know if you've ever sat and watched vultures live, but even when they fly, they seek out thermals. They don't use a lot of, you know, wing strokes to stay afloat. You know what I mean? Airborne. You know, they just like glide a lot, looking for rising air or falling air. They're very efficient at just staying airborne and searching out for dead things. And they, you know, they make their routes regularly. You know, they'll cruise through here a few times a day, kind of checking it out, see if there's anything new that's dead, you know. But anyway, so I knew that this vulture probably didn't take off unless there was nothing to see here, if you know what I mean. So I couldn't find it as I went down the first part of the hill, and then when I turned right to go, you know, down the second part of the hill, I was going really slow, and I was like, I got to pull over and just see if I can find this vulture. And then once I kind of stopped, Rochelle and I are looking, and sure enough, you could see that vulture down on the ground in some tall grass. You couldn't see anything, couldn't see it, you know, what it was eating or doing, but come on, it's pretty obvious that that little fawn died and that that vulture is there to clean up the mess. And it really makes you feel bad in a way, but I mean, what can you do? Like, even if you, like, if you see a fawn out in the wild, you really need, and it's alone, you really need to kind of just leave it alone. Because mom may, they leave their fawns in, especially, I've shown, I showed a video where I showed these white Shasta daisies. Well, actually, they're just white daisies. I'm not sure they're Shasta daisies. But Shasta daisies and these daisies look pretty much the same, except these daisies are much shorter. And when those daisies are blooming, you know that that's when the fawns are going to be born, because the fawn spots look like these daisies, so it's perfect camouflage. So when you see a fawn out in the wild, you're supposed to leave it alone. Mom's going to come back, you know, unless mom's dead. But, you know, how do you know unless you really can kind of come back and check on that animal a few times? And I don't mean every 10 minutes. I mean hours apart. And see that the, you know, that that fawn is still there and unmolested, like hasn't been moved by mom or a predator. So anyway, by the time you find out, it's too late. And so that's what brought me to this whole kind of turkey vulture thing, and wanting to do just a tiny bit of research on vultures. I thought there was multiple kind of vultures here in Oregon. Turns out there's only one turkey vulture. That's it. And yeah. I love them because they take care of business. And yeah, I hate them because usually, like in cases like this, you never know. I did order a new drone this week. I'm really kind of excited about it. I ordered the Mavic Air 2. Has better camera, better stability, longer flight time, like 34-minute flight time. I got this extended flight pack. It was such a deal. I'd been shopping, I'd actually been looking for this very package for about a month, and nobody had it. And all of a sudden, on Thursday, I get this alert on my phone that it's for sale at a certain place. And I don't do stuff at work, so I didn't respond. I don't do stuff on my phone out in public. I only do it here on my home network. And I don't do stuff at work on any accounts on the browser, because I don't want anybody at work knowing where I shop or what I'm doing or any of that stuff. So, you know, it's just a privacy thing for me and a security thing too. So anyway, I got home Thursday night and I checked, and sure enough, that one drone package at one shop was available, and I bought it. So I'm kind of excited about this drone, because I bought the first drone to learn how to fly them and get some experience with them. And this drone was a lot more expensive, and it's a much better drone. But I could have launched that drone and kind of searched that hillside yesterday and probably seen this fawn in dire straits, and we would have been able to get her and, you know, bring her home and at least try and feed her. You know, I'm going to tell you something, though. Deer do not do well going from wild life to captive life. One time, I can't remember why, but we had a deer that was not a fawn. And we had it in the barn for some reason, and when we called DFW because it was wounded, I don't know, broken leg or whatever, they were like, oh, yeah, it's probably not going to survive. And we're like, why? They go, oh, they hate being in captivity. Like, And I don't know if it's just the deer in Oregon. Like in the eastern part of Oregon, we have mule deer. On the western side, we have whitetail and we have blacktail. And I don't know, they don't do well. So I was told, and sure enough, this deer didn't live. And, you know, it didn't have gruesome wounds, but it was crippled up. And, you know, it was crippled up enough that we picked it up and brought it home. Like, it didn't fight a whole lot. But, man, I'm telling you, after it was kind of in a stall, which maybe that was the first mistake, but after it was in a stall and realized it couldn't get, like, it wasn't getting out, it was kind of like it gave up. It was like, okay, screw it, I'm done. Yeah, that was kind of sad. Anyway, lessons from the homestead, I guess. And that's my vulture story. So let's get to some of this ridiculous stuff. I'm not kidding. Well, first of all, this is one of those quick hit stories. So the World Health Organization and Lancet Commission, both the World Health Organization and Lancet Commission chiefs came out in support of the lab leak theory of COVID-19. What do you say about that? I mean, was the evidence just finally so overwhelming that they don't want to look like complete idiots? But they do. But anyway, so I'm keeping a file on all the fake news that is now being proven to be true. So in the future, we'll just open this file and, you know, see the things that are changing now. Also this Michael Stinger. Did you guys see this? Michael Stinger, the former U.S. Senate Sergeant-at-Arms, who was in charge of Senate security during the breach of the U.S. Capitol on January 6, 2021, died on June 27th. Wait for it. The circumstances and cause of death weren't immediately clear. He probably hung himself and then shot himself in the back of the head, is what I'm guessing. But guess what he said? In an interview at a congressional hearing on February 23rd of 2021, Stinger called the events of January 6th a violent, coordinated attack where the loss of life could have been much worse. He called for an investigation of professional agitators. But I'm sure that has nothing to do with the circumstances and cause of his death. But I'm sure we're going to find out it was a complete accident, whatever it was. And strange, man. I mean, he was 71, but come on. Seriously. Yeah, why would that guy die? I can see I am not going to get to all these stories tonight. Okay, we're going to do this one because this has got to be the most ridiculous story of the week. Damn it. Oh, here we go. Okay, now listen to this. Black suspect shot 60 times, dies at the scene in Akron. City braces for uproar, cancels some July 4th celebrations. Now, like before I even started to read this story, and I can't tell you I've actually read this story yet, because I don't really need to know much more than somebody, like some law enforcement group or agency, shot one man 60 times? You have got to be kidding me. Like, that's going to be some of the worst, most poorly trained gun handlers I have ever heard of. They literally shot him 60 times. They said about 100 rounds or over 100 rounds were fired. There is no reason. There literally is no reason for somebody to be shot 60 times. Like how, it doesn't even matter. But how many people were there? Like, was it 12 people and each fired 5 rounds and hit him 5 times each? Like, was it 100 people who shot once and 60 of them hit him? And like, how does that happen, that many rounds are pumped into a human being? I don't even know. Maybe it's the worst. Maybe he's the worst human being in the world. But 60 effing rounds actually hit him? Like, good Lord. What would be left? Especially if they're using a 9mm, which Joe Biden says will blow the lung right out of the body. Oh my God. Yeah, that's why I bought a 9mm. I'm kidding. I know what a 9mm do, and it won't do that. 60 rounds into one human being. 100 rounds fired in Akron, Ohio. Oh, I bet there's going to be a lot more going on the next couple of days. Keep your eyes out in Akron. But then, what about the other extreme? What about Uvalde? Like, why in the hell do we have, like, on one side of the, you know, in one state, you have some bunch of, I don't know, law enforcement, I guess, fire 100 rounds at one single human being and hit him 60 times. And in Uvalde, we had cops who didn't do anything. And tell me that this doesn't seem like somebody is coordinating these stories. Do I mean that people are actually making these two scenarios happen? Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, are these two things, like, coincidentally polar opposite of each other? How could you have somebody at some law enforcement people at a school shooting where children are being executed, I think is the only word you could possibly use accurately. And not one of those law enforcement people for an hour or more do anything to stop the bad guy. And yet here in Akron, you have a dude that I don't know what he did. And they don't fire. So the guys in Akron fire 100 rounds. Hit the guys. Here, let's just see here. Sources told WKYC-TV that while no gun was found on Walker after he was killed, a gun and multiple shell casings were recovered from his vehicle. Well, none of that is surprising. Fired nearly 100 bullets at a young black suspect and city officials, blah, blah, blah. According to reports, police attempted to pull Jalen Walker over shortly after midnight on Tuesday morning when he suddenly took off and led them on a high-speed chase for several minutes. Nothing wrong with that. They say he attempted to flee on foot and at some point discharged a weapon. Summary of the events posted. Facebook claims that actions by the suspect caused the officers to perceive he posed a deadly threat to them. In response to this threat, I'm sorry for laughing. I swear I'm not kidding. It's inappropriate to laugh. In response to this threat, officers discharged their firearms, striking the suspect. So you got to wonder how many of them were chasing this guy on foot. I mean, that would look like a platoon of people, wouldn't it? I mean, I wonder how many rounds the cops have. 30, you suppose, in their magazines? That's a lot. I mean, they can't really put too many more in. It starts looking really stupid when you have like 100-round magazine sticking out of a handgun. It looks ridiculous. I don't know how I know that, honestly. Let's see. Wounds could be seen. Yeah, we don't want to read that. Three News investigates examined autopsy records, including about 150 photos of Walker's wounds and about 60 photos of bullet fragments. A large majority of the wounds were to the front of Walker's body. He was 25 years old. He had no criminal history other than a traffic ticket. Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know. This is going to be another one of those cases, you know. Like, somewhere along the way, you got to stop this. Something went horribly wrong here. For the cops and the kid. Not a good scenario, no matter what. I mean, can't you? Yeah, I don't know. Hate to speculate, but come on. Even without speculation, 60 rounds is about 50-something too many. Like about 59 too many, honestly. Okay, let's say 55. Because, you know, you're terrified when you're shooting at somebody. Oh, my goodness. Okay. We got like 10, 11, 12 minutes. I wanted to tell you, let's make sure. Okay, told you that. God, that's a good one, too. Okay. We're going to go over these two. This is kind of cool. So I know everybody's crazy about the, about the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade. But actually, this was actually kind of a cool story because I've been talking a lot about opioids lately and fentanyl. And then I see this story, Supreme Court rules in favor of doctors challenging opioid convictions. Now, here's the deal about this. I got to find this story, but let me find this opioid news. Yeah. Okay. So here's the deal with this. So the Supreme Court, these two doctors kind of sued because they felt that they were, you know, wrongfully convicted of writing too many opioid prescriptions. Which, yeah, they, okay, I'm going to give you the rest of the story here. But it says Supreme Court protects doctors, and then I kind of put in parentheses, initially. So basically what the Supreme Court did, ruled in favor of two doctors challenging convictions on drug distribution charges for overprescribing controlled opioids on the rationale that their actions may have been in good faith. So the Supreme Court said, hey, these docs wrote, they're licensed to write prescriptions for opioids. They wrote prescriptions for opioids, and that doesn't immediately like make them, no matter how many prescriptions they wrote, doesn't really make them criminals. So they overturned, the justices ruled 9-0 on June 27th, siding with Dr. Ziulu Ruan and Dr. Shaquille Khan. Justice said their trials were unfair because jurors were not required to consider whether the two convicted doctors had good faith reasons to prescribe numerous off-label opioid prescriptions. Okay, so here's the deal. Okay, so yeah. So the jury didn't, so let's say the docs were, you know, maybe they had an internet, like an online thing, and you just like phoned in and did telemedicine. And you were like, oh, my back, it's killing me. You know, I can barely walk. I got, you know, spinal whatever. And the doc's like, okay, we're going to write you this prescription. And, you know, and let's say that whole transaction was legal, that it was legal to have the telemedicine conference. It was legal for the doc to write the prescription for the patient who's having, you know, severe pain, although, you know, you'd probably really want to examine the patient up close and in person, at least have some imaging done and, you know, verify that there's some pain and or reason for pain there. But I mean, hell, I mean, there's diseases now that, you know, don't show up on x-ray, you know, and people get pain meds for them. So anyway, here's where I think the docs are still going to be in trouble in the long run. Well, they were sentenced to 21 and 25 years in prison in separate criminal cases. Ron and his business partner were convicted for running a clinic that issued nearly 300,000 controlled drugs from 2011 to 2015, which, okay, I know you're thinking, man, that's a lot of opiates. Okay, maybe it is, but you see, you know, 100 patients a day, I don't know, it wouldn't take long, even if it was 20 patients a day. If they're all coming to you for chronic pain management, this number doesn't seem too outrageous to me. 300 controlled drugs from 2011 to 2015. But we're going to find out why I think it's still a little fishy. Of particular importance was the prosecutors finding him to almost exclusively prescribe Subsys, that's a drug name, and Amstrol, that's a drug name, two brand name instant release fentanyl drugs for off-label neck, back, and joint pain, even though it was indicated as a prescription for breakthrough cancer pain in opioid-tolerant patients. Okay, here's the rest of the story. Man, remember Paul Harvey? Ruin and his partner also received kickbacks from the manufacturer of Subsys in exchange for prescribing great quantities of the drug, putting him as one of the top prescribers of Subsys in the United States, according to DOG statements. The two also purchased around $1.6 million worth of stocks in Galena Biopharma, the manufacturer of Amstrol. From 2013 to 2014, he and his partner were the number one and number two prescribers of Amstrol in the United States, respectively, the statement said. Okay, so you see, like, it kind of sucks because it's good that the Supreme Court kind of saw through this and was like, no, you can't just convict them because they wrote prescriptions that they're licensed to write prescriptions for. Now, let me tell you, this actually affects me on a daily basis because the legal system is so kind of hot about opioid prescription writing. We actually have continuing education courses to remind us not to write prescriptions for, you know, Percocet and Norco and whatever, like hydrocodone and oxycodone, basically. And here's the problem with that. You have patients that require a medium to strong pain medicine. And, you know, I'm always going to write my patients the appropriate medication for their pain, mainly if I caused it, but occasionally I'll write that prescription for something that I didn't cause, and by causing it, I mean, if I do an extraction, I'm probably going to give you some pain meds because I want you to rest and recover and not do anything for like a day or two so you get good healing and avoid dry socket and post-op complications and stuff. But, yeah, the DEA, the dental board, the local dental society, everybody's so hot on this whole opioid thing that, you know, if I were to write like every patient I saw, of course, this wouldn't be appropriate. But if I wrote, I'm going to pick kind of a non, this is, I'll just say 40. Let's say I wrote my patients 40 tablets of oxycodone or hydrocodone, and I used to do this from 2013 to 2018. That was the standard prescription I gave my surgery patients because the surgeries we were doing were actually pretty dang big. We were doing bone reshaping, bony architecture, implant placement, implants and dentures, and they got 40 Percocet or 40 Norcos from me, standard issue, because they were, as a matter of fact, I gave it to them before the surgery so they could have it on board. Anyway, yeah, that, you know, then you would get questioned occasionally on that too. It's like, hey man, what are you doing writing 40 oxycodones? You're a dentist. Well, you know, my patients needed it. And I never have been in trouble for writing the, you know, appropriate prescription for my patients. But my point is, you know, everybody's looking, you know, and kind of double checking. So you can't just like, you have to be careful about, you know, your prescription writing, or, you know, they come and ask you questions. I don't want any feds showing up asking me questions for anything, period. I don't want to be on the radar for anything, but I don't want my patients to suffer either. So, you know, that happens. Okay. This is another kind of cool story, but kind of not, it's got some little bad news in it too. So I've talked about this Togo Wolf Pack in Washington State before, which is, it's a wolf pack in Washington State that has come from, yeah, we got a couple minutes, so it's perfect timing. So this, you know, we reintroduced wolves into the United States, what, back in 95 or something like that, and the wolves have been doing better, and they've been kind of expanding their territory. And now this wolf pack in Washington, it's called the Togo Wolf Pack. It's been kind of the center of controversy lately because there's an entity that, I forget the name of this. It's like let me find out the name of this. Do I have it? Well, anyway, so there's a group of people looking out for the wolves, which is good. And they're trying to impose, or have the state of Washington impose, some pretty strict requirements on the cattlemen before any action is taken against the wolves. In other words, wolves are going to eat calves, right? That's kind of standard. Cattlemen are trying to raise beef for the rest of the country. Well, so there's this North American, God, I wish I could remember, and I can't, sorry. And it's in these notes, but now I'm feeling stressed because I got to finish on time. I'll be okay. Well, anyway, so, oh, I hate it when I do that. Anyway, the Togo Wolf Pack killed like 4 calves in a short period of time. And that kind of triggered this, policy that the Washington State Department of Fish and Wildlife would go in and take out a couple of the wolves. Well, they tried to do some range riding and keep the wolves away first, but, that didn't actually help at all. The wolves still kind of made it through, killed another calf, so they had to kill a couple. Well, no, they chose to kill a couple of the wolves of that Togo pack. My point is, you know, like, we reintroduced wolves, but then we got kind of didn't put all the other things in place we needed to get the cattlemen ready for it. See you guys on Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Redneck Dentist Podcast. Please show your support for the podcast. This podcast is not on the biggest platforms, but it is on the best free speech platforms. Until next time, remember, all bleeding eventually stops.